welcomes you to another baseball broadcast brought to you direct from Comiskey Park by permission of the Chicago White Sox and the Philadelphia Athletics to stimulate interest in our national game and in your local team. And now after Comiskey Park and Hal Totten, who is going to give us some inside information on today's game right from the playing field. Take it away, Hal Totten.
The White Sox in Chicago, where the White Sox and the Philadelphia Athletics are going to play the fourth and final game of this present series. Right now, there's a man here that looks like they want to get a picture of this one. Come on up one step here. These young ladies here have got a camera and want to get a picture of us on the microphone, which is all right.
I'm going to make that camera, Al.
I don't think we will. This is Tony Pye, ladies and gentlemen. I really didn't have time to tell you who it was until we had to start posing for cameras over here. Tony is now a third baseman. Last time we had him on the air, he was a second baseman. So, Tony, I want to ask you some questions about that. You were on before. You said, didn't you, that second base has been your position regularly ever since you started playing?
Well, yes, I have played second base more, but I think I can play third base as well if I play long enough.
Oh, I know you play it very well. Whether you play long enough or not, you look like an old trooper out there. But you played some of that up there in the International League last year, didn't you?
Well, yes, I have played a few games.
Lucius Luke.
Huh? That's right. I played a little with the Reds. I think I played about 50 games at third base in 1934 with the Reds. That gave me a pretty good idea about third base, but I have a lot to learn.
Well, what is the chief difference you find between those two positions?
Well, I haven't played third base much this year, and I think it's all in the throwing.
Finally that, huh?
The arm has got to be rebuilt all over again on different muscles put into use. That's all there is to it, Hal.
Well, the throw from second base is mostly underhand.
That's right. This is more of an overhand throw, and of course, it's a ball comes at you at a different angle, and I've got to learn the hitters, and Jimmy's been a great help to me.
He sort of moves you around, does he, in and out?
He does.
Back and forth. Do you mind going in after those bunts?
Well, they haven't been bunting much, but I believe I can make them if I'm just daring them to bunt, that's all.
Just dare them to it. You'll be in there charging them.
That's right. I'll be.
Well, even at that, over there at second base sometimes, a few fellas are still drag bunts to sort of pull them down where you got to come over and get them.
That's about nearly the same as a bunt, only the throw is a little shorter. It's more of a flip.
I see. From second.
Yeah.
Outside of the throw, though, you find that it's approximately the same for fly balls, I suppose it is. You got to take foul balls here and fight off this grandstand a little bit. But then you do that from second base over the other side.
You do that as well over second base.
Of course, does the ball come at you? What do you mean when you said it came at you at a different angle?
Well, you don't see the ball as you do at second base. The ball kind of just flies off the bat, especially a left-hand hitter. It just comes at you before you know it. That's why they call it a hot corner, Hal.
I see. I get it. In other words, you've got to really start a little quicker. Is that it?
Yeah, you just got to get the knack of which way the ball will go to you, right or to your left.
And most of them going down there are curving more than they are out there second base,
really,
too, aren't they?
Yeah, sometimes the left-hand hitter slices the ball, and you've just, if you play the third base long enough, you'll be able to tell whether the ball will go 2 or 3 feet to either side of you.
But you've got to get used to the vision of it.
That's the knack of playing third base only.
Looks a little bit as though you got that bat swinging good again. You got a little slump there for a while, didn't you?
Oh, well, I suppose
things happen. I know, what?
All ball players have them, but I just probably had one for too long of a period.
Well, I think there's several fellas on this club and every other club they have. I've seen them all up and down the line. They get them every year, and when it's all over, it's all over.
Well, I'll be glad to be in this club all year if we could just keep winning ball games.
Well, that's right, too. Well, Tony, I imagine you want to dry off a little. You've been out there getting all full of perspiration, and I want to thank you a lot for stopping here and chatting with us. Wish you a lot of luck at your new job, and that fella Dykes deserves a rest, and you're giving him a good one and not making him worry about it, which is okay.
All right, Al, thanks a lot.
Thank you. That was Tony Pye, ladies and gentlemen, the present third baseman of the White Sox, early part of the year, the second baseman of the club, chatting with us a little bit about this, that, and other things, and I hope you were very much interested in what was going on. And now, let's give you the lineup for the ball game today. For Philadelphia, Finney, left, Moses, center, Dean, first, Puccinelli, right, Johnson, second, Higgins, third, Frank Hayes, catching, Newsom, short, and Rhodes, pitcher. For the White Sox, Radcliffe, left, Cleavage, center. Haas, right. Benora, first. Appling, short. Hayes, second. Pyatt, third. Sewell, catching. And Kennedy, pitching. Kennedy. Vernon Kennedy will be the pitcher. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to start a little trek up there to the booth, possibly a little bit earlier than at some times, because I want to chat with a certain young man that I saw here in the stands on the way up. I might add, though, that it's another one of those days that, well, you sort of dream about out here. Perfect sunshine, but a nice cool breeze off the lake blowing in from the north. What do you get there, Teddy? Oh, a brand new potato. Old Teddy Lyons managed to sneak a brand new potato from somebody, and he's going to have it autographed for somebody. He's going to send that back to Opelousas. I mean, where is that place down there you live? Vinton, Louisiana? Is that where it's going? It is, eh? And how did you get... Who'd you sneak that on? Billy Webb, or did you just sneak it? Oh, he gave you that one. Two of you. Okay, Teddy Lyons was giving all you're just beaming all over. He had a brand new ball to get autographed. You people that ask for baseballs have no idea how tough it is to get them. And as a matter of fact, ball players have a tougher time. Now listen, Merv. Merv Shea going to pull my trouser leg off. That's bad. The ball players themselves have a tougher time getting them than most of the fans do, or friends of the fans, or somebody like that. They have to start a big borrower steal them, otherwise maybe they'd have one every day. But on this perfect day with the breeze blowing in, nice, cool, sun out, nice and warm, making about an even possibility, I think probably we'd better start upstairs. And as we make that trek up there to the booth, Uncle George, how about a little switch to the studio?
Attention, motorists. Too many of you are digging down into your pockets to pay over and over again for motor oil. An extra quart now, a couple more quarts a few hundred miles later, constantly refilling the crankcase. You'll be glad to know that your Texaco dealer has an entirely new motor oil that will positively cut down your oil consumption. The need to have carbon removed and protect your engine longer against wear and tear. The new Texaco motor oil, made by the Perfurol process, provides a newer, tougher lubricating film that resists burning up inside the engine. It puts more miles between the quarts you buy. With the new Texaco motor oil, your car will not be oil thirsty. Perfurol is a special refining material. When oil is treated with Perfurol, a stronger lubricating film results. This Perfurol film acts like a protective wrapping for each of the moving parts of your engine. It lubricates better for many extra miles, providing greater, more complete engine protection. From the minute you fill the crankcase of your car with the new Texaco motor oil, you begin saving real money. You still pay only a quarter a quart, but you get greater mileage between those quarts. So change now at any Texaco station to this tougher, longer-lasting oil with a Perfurol film. Make your driving dollars go further. And now for a look at the... Well, I see we haven't time for that. I see that Hal Totten is ready, and we'll go back to Comiskey Park to the baseball game brought to you by permission of the Chicago White Sox and the Philadelphia Athletics to stimulate interest in our national game and in your local team. Take it, Hal Totten.
Am I on the air, George? Don't tell me I'm on the air. Well, being on the air, I'm on the air. Better talk on the air. So in that case, we mentioned the fact that the umpires have finished their conference at the plate and taking their positions out there in the field. Umpire Quinn behind the plate, umpire Hubbard on first base, and Bill McGowan, role buddy, out there third. Bill McGowan, I might add, is one of the discoveries, and admits it, and is very proud of it, of baseball writers. Baseball writers introduced Bill McGowan into the American League. So many, many years ago, the Yankees were coming north, and they're playing a lot of games, and they picked up one of the teams, I don't remember which one, to play some games with, and as they went along, they had umpire McGowan with them. He was just a youngster, but they liked his ambitions and his hustle, and the baseball writers went back to New York, and they called Ben Johnson, and they kept it Ben until he hired him. And now we have here the fellow who, not only to the observers, but also to the ball players themselves, is the finest umpire
or won it. Of course, we can't say that, but the ball players voted him the best umpire in the league from a ball player's point of view, but he's by far one of the finest umpires that the game has known. And he has sort of taken his little fellow Quinn under his wing. Quinn, the boy who is with him and who had a bad year last year, but has come along in grand shape this year to become another great umpire. And by nursing with him, talking baseball with him, and otherwise putting himself out if necessary to satisfy his thirst for knowledge of just how to handle his job, he's made a great umpire out of him. I think he's going to develop also into a finalist. Hubbard, the youngster, that is out here, is also coming along fine. Well, for the fourth day in a row, Finney goes after the first ball pitched to him, hits the ground ball down to the second baseman, and is thrown up. So his percentage is 50-50. In the opening game and in the third game of the series, he hit the first ball pitch and made base hits. In the second game and again in this game, he was out on that first pitch. And so it's one out of the first inning for the Athletics. And Wally Moses, the center fielder up there, bunts the first one, but it's fouled to the left of the plate. And Fyatt comes in to get it, but there's no play because it was outside. And it's strike one. Ball is going back out to Kennedy, the pitcher. And starts his windup, throws the next one. It's inside and low for ball one. So the count is 1-1. One ball and one strike on Moses. And there's ball two. It's inside and low. You remember Kennedy started the first game of the series here and lost it. He was very wild. And eventually things went very badly, although the Sox ended up tying up the score. Didn't do an awful lot of good. Now he reaches out the butt again, and this one goes foul clear over to the Sox dugout. And so it's 2-2, two balls and two strikes. Here's the next pitch, the hitter swing, get a little looping fly in left field. Radcliffe comes in fast, can't get to it, and it drops in there for a base hit. Little looping Texaco leaguer into left field for a single for Moses, putting him on first base with one out in the first inning, and Chubb Dean, the first baseman, is back. He throws the first one, the runner's on the go, the hitter takes it inside and low, and the runner slides in safely. And he got a great start on that ball. Moses, as I have mentioned time and again in this series and in other series, one of the fastest men in the game, and he got a great jump on the ball that time. Easily stole second. Sewell got the throw away very well, very fast. He throw got out there in a hurry. While it was a little bit high, still the runner was in there at the base long before it arrived. Long speaking in the sense of comparative time, because naturally those plays happen fast. Now Dean hits the next one, a ground ball to Appling, who gets it, throws the third, and Fyatt tags the runner out, sliding in there for the second out. Moses kept right on to third base. Appling got the ball, threw it to Fyatt, who just merely put the ball down there and let Moses slide right into it for the second out. So it's two outs in the first inning for the Athletics. Dean on first base, and George Puccinelli, the Athletics right fielder, is at bat. He throws the first one, and George takes a fast strike over the outside corner about knee high. One strike on Puccinelli. And there's the next one, wide and low for ball one, and the count is one ball and one strike. 1-1 on the Pooch. As he's done again, turns and throws the first. The runner gets back in plenty of time. So the ball comes back to the pitcher. He has it, looks at first, then pitches. And the hitter swings and hits a high fastball inside for strike two. And it's one ball and two strikes on Puccinelli. 1-2 the count. Now the the runner on the golf pooch fouls this one into the stands to the right of the plate, well, it lands just short of the stands over there. And it's still one ball and two strikes on Puccinelli. I don't think that was a hit-and-run play. I think Pooch just swung to cover, to protect the runner when he thought the runner didn't get away soon enough and fouled off a bad ball, because they'd hardly put the hit-and-run on with a count of one and two unless they had some reason to be sure of the pitcher. They did it again. The hitter hits the ground ball down to Pyatt, who starts to throw to second, sees that there's nobody there, so turns and throws to first. Throw is wide, but Venura grabs it and then blocks the runner off and tags him out. Ball was well hit, and Pyatt grabbed it, running over towards second. He thought it would be a good play, I guess, to get the man a second, because he was running in that direction. And that short throw is a throw more accustomed to what he has been used to at second base. There was nobody there, so he turned it through wide to first. And Venura, reaching way out to the left, grabbed the ball down low and had it in plenty of time to block Puccinelli off. So it's no runs, one hit, one man left on base in the first half of the first inning. And the score is nothing to nothing as the White Sox come to bat in the last half of the first inning, with Rip Ratcliffe, as usual, the first man at bat. Dusty Rhodes, originally, when I first knew him, he was with the New York Yankees. He didn't stay there long, went to the Boston Red Sox, was with them for quite a while, and came to the A's last winter in the deal, one of the numerous deals between the Athletics and the Red Sox. And he's been pitching some pretty good ball for this club. But this, I think, is his first appearance in Chicago this year. Tander, rather stockily built fellow, dark complexion, and very handsome, set up for you young ladies. Situates out there now, gets his sign, starts his wind up to pitch the first one to Ratcliffe, stocky little left-handed hitter, and Rip swings it out to the shortstop, who takes it on a great big long hop, throws the first, and Rip is out easily for the first out in the first inning. One off, and Mike Peavy is up there. Rosenthal still has the handicap of that twisted back, and he twisted running down to first base yesterday. So Mike has been moved over to his center field spot, and Haas is back in right. And the first pitch to Peavich is a wide one low for ball one. Peavich is a right-handed hitter. Rhodes has his sign again, starts to wind up. Throws, and Mike reaches out to butt one down towards third base. Higgins comes in fast, grabs it. Throws very high to first, but Dean Lee trying there to grab it. Peavich, in the meantime, having crossed first base easily. So it's a base hit, base bunt. Down third baseline by Kravitz, putting him on first base with one out in the first inning for the White Sox, and Mulehaus is at bat. They're ready to pitch the first one, throws, and Mule takes the ball. It's inside and low. One ball called. Again, Rhodes has the sign. And pitches and Mule swings, hit a ball right straight back at the second baseman, who fumbles it. And by the time he gets to the ball, the runner is safe at first base on an error by Hayes. An error by Johnson. And rather an easily hit ball, too, right straight at him. Took a high hop, but he didn't follow it at all. So now the White Sox have runners on first and second with one out in the first inning, and Zeke Venura is at bat. Well, it's the first player that we have seen that Johnson hasn't looked good on in his transplanted position in this series. First pitch to Zeke is a wide one across the waist for ball one. Waits there again, swings around as he gets his sign. Ready. And pitches, and Zeke takes ball two. It's wide across the chest and makes it 2-0. Two balls and no strikes. Pitcher ready again. Throws, and Zeke twists away to take the third ball inside across the waist to make it 3-0. Three balls and no strikes on Zeke.
Still got our symphony orchestra out here, George. Hear the whistle? Pitcher ready once more. Takes another look back at second. Throws, and it's a strike over the heart of the plate, a little above the knees. Zeke let it go by without trying for it, so it's 3-1, three balls and one strike. And again, the pitcher throws. Zeke gets the ball hard in the center field, but the center fielder Moses is in there to make the catch for the second out. Runners have to go back to their bases. Ball was very hard hit, a line smash, center field, but it was right straight at Moses, the center fielder. So it's 2 out in the first inning for the White Sox. They still have runners on first and second, and Luke Appling is at bat. Swings around, he gets the sign, gets ready to pitch. Throws, and it's a strike over the outside corner about knee high. One strike on Appling. Rhodes ready again, takes another look back at second, and throws. Luke swings, the bat flips out of his hand, goes clear out to the pitcher's box as the ball goes down to the third baseman, and Luke is safe, and Rhodes is mad and throws the bat clear out of the infield. Just misses umpire Quinn down there. Rhodes is so sore because in hitting that ball, the bat flipped out of Appling's hand, rolled out to the pitcher's box. Rhodes stood there, watched it come out there, and let it roll up on his feet. And then he was mad and swung it clear off the mound and out into foul territory as Appling beat out the ball for an infield hit. Now the White Sox have the bases full with 2 out in the first inning. And it's a wide one across the knees for ball one. One ball called. Rhodes walks up to the dirt in front of the mound, moves it down a little bit. Walks back out there, adjusts his cap. Now starts to wind up. He throws, and Jackie Hayes, the bat, fouls the ball back against the catcher's glove and back to the screen. And it's 1-1 on Hayes. One ball and one strike. One is the count. It throws again, and Jackie swings to miss one for strike two. And it's 1-2. One ball and two strikes. One and two. Waiting out there again. Seems to be getting his sign. Takes a look at third base. Starts his windup. And pitches, and Jackie hits the ball out in the left center. I think it's going to fall in. There it is. For a base hit. One run is in. The ball is coming into the plate as the second runner scores. And the other runners advance to second and third with Hayes coming in pretty hard and almost falling over as he tries to come up on his feet. It's a single. Texaco leaguer, too, by Cracky. Oh, Texaco leaguers can drive in those runs, can't they? Single to left center by Hayes. Scored Kivic and Haas for the first two runs of the ball game, both unearned runs, because the error, if it hadn't been made, would have made it the third out when Panura flied out. And runners are on second and third with 2 out, 2 runs home in the first inning, and Tony Pyatt is at bat. He winds up, throws the first one, and Pyatt twists away, takes the ball inside across the chest. He's all set to go after that one, too. Throws again and Pryor takes a strike over the heart of the plate, waist high. And the count is 1-1. One ball and one strike on Pryor. Rhodes throws again and Tony swings and follows the ball back against the mask and rolls out into the infield. And the catcher goes out to get it, looks it over as he comes back. Umpire Quinn has thrown another ball into the game, calls for that one, and I think he's going to throw it out. Catcher Hayes has looked it over and indicated it should be, yes. Quinn, after a look at it, throws it out of the game. The umpires, you know, are the only ones authorized to do that. And umpire Quinn, who followed the rules, had to examine it to make sure that it really was improper for use. It's 1-2, one ball and two strikes. And the pitcher throws again. The hitter started to swing, stop. The ball hit the bat and rolled over there, but and the catcher started to go after it. A fan reached into the stands and grabbed it, and the catcher walks back without it. I don't think the catcher knew whether that ball had been tipped foul or not. He thought maybe it might have been a passed ball. When chasing over after it, and both Dean and Rhodes came rushing into cover, the umpire called it a foul and strike. So it's still 1-2 on Pryor. One ball and two strikes. Once again, the pitcher has that sign, starts to wind up, throws, and Tony takes a wide one across the knees for ball two. Catcher started to run toward the bench, though he thought that was a called third strike. Rhodes made a half-hearted start toward the bench, but takes the ball and goes back out the mound. The count is two balls and two strikes on Pyatt. 2-2 the count. Winding up again, throws, and Pyatt gets ball three. Missed the outside corner up around the chest. And it makes it 3-2. Three balls and two strikes on Pyatt. White Sox have runners on second and third with two outs, two runs home, and they're leading the Athletics 2-0 in the first inning. Rhodes winds up, throws again, and Pyatt gets ball four. Wide and low, and gets the base on ball. So that fills the bases for the White Sox in the first inning. Two out, two runs already home, bases full, and Luke Sewell at bat. Score 2-0 in favor of the White Sox. Rhodes starts to wind up pitches, and it's a high one inside for ball one. One ball on Sewell. It's winding up again. He throws and looks, swings, and fouls the ball back against the umpire's mask this time. Bounds way out against the sand of the left plate. Meyer Quinn merely adjusts the mask. It took quite a bump. He turns around, calls to somebody. He'll call the announcer, I guess. He's going to need some more baseballs in a minute. It's 1-1, one ball and one strike. And Sewell gets the second strike. A beauty over the heart of the plate down around the knees to make it one ball and two strikes on Sewell. 1-2. Winds up again, throws, and Sewell swings and misses, striking out for the third out in the first inning. Went around on a ball that didn't look as though it had a thing on it, but he didn't hit it. So it must have had something after all. That ends the last half of the first inning. So it's two runs, three, four hits. Wait a minute. One, two, three hits. One error. And three men left on base. And the score is 2-0 in favor of the White Sox at the end of the first inning. Motor oil has more than one job to do. It must lubricate all the moving parts of the motor. It must seal the power in the cylinder. And it must help to keep moving parts cool. There's one way you can be absolutely sure that the motor oil in your car is doing a complete job. Use nothing but new Texaco motor oil. Bob Johnson, rangy right-handed hitter, the Athletic second baseman, the bat to start the second inning. Kennedy winds up, throws. Bob swings to foul the ball back onto the roof of the stand, right up back of the plate. And it's one strike on Johnson. One strike to count. And there's a ball inside across the waist for the count. It's one ball and one strike. One and one on Johnson. And now comes ball two. It's over the plate, but too low. So it's two balls and one strike on Bob. Two and one. Swings again to hit a high fly coming down far way back here. I believe it's on the roof. Yep. Right up over our heads. Found it clear out over and back down into 35th Street. Well, he swings again, and it's a high fly going foul to the right of the plate. Sewell is following out under it toward the stand to the right and makes the catch for the first out in the second inning. One out of the second inning for the Athletics, and Higgins. Pinky Higgins, the third baseman, is at bat. The first pitch is started to in time, but he stopped in time to pull away from the inside pitch and have it called ball one. Has a wide one low for ball two, and the count is two and nothing. Two and nothing, and there's a strike over the heart of the plate just above the knees. So it's two balls and one strike on Higgins. Two and one the count. Think watches the third ball come by now. It's over the plate, but much too low. And it makes it three balls and one strike on Higgins. And now comes strike two, a fastball over the heart of the plate, waist high. And the count is three and two. There comes the fourth ball inside. And Kennedy really had trouble with his control. So both men finally walked Higgins. The Pinkies on first base with one out in the second inning. And Frank Hayes, the catcher, is up there at the plate. Hayes at bat. Kennedy throws the first one, and it's a fast one that's inside across the waist. Ball one. One ball called. It's ready again, throws, and it's ball two, a curveball wide and low. Well, Vernon is having a little trouble in the control department. Had a lot of trouble with his control 3 days ago in the open game of this series, you remember, when he was defeated. Although the Sox tied it up later on, he was knocked out of there. And there comes a strike, a fastball over the heart of the plate, waist high. One thing about this kid, he may have bad control, but he never quits bearing down. He's going to throw it with everything he's got. And if it goes away from the plate, it's too bad, but he's still throwing plenty. He loses that one by just an eyelash there in the corner. And it goes as ball three, but that was pretty close to corner. So it's three balls and one strike on Hayes. Three and one to count. Kennedy throws first base. The runner gets back there. Now Kennedy pitches again, and it's ball four, wide and low. And Hayes also gets the base on balls, moves Higgins to second base. And the Athletics have runners on first and second, with nobody, well, with one out in the second inning. And Newsom, Whitey Newsom, the A's shortstop, is at bat. And the first pitch is a strike over the heart of the plate just above the knees. One strike on Newsom. One strike
strike the count, and there's a ball wide, and Sewell throws the ball to first base, but the throw is very bad, and so Panura has to leap into the infield to grab it. He really had that fellow caught pretty well off the base, but his throw was so high and wide that Panura had to leave the bag and chase into the infield and leap into the air to grab it. So it's 1-1, one ball and one strike on Newsom. Kennedy swings around again, pitches, and it's ball two. It just barely missed the outside corner across the waist. So it's two balls and one strike. One. He throws again with the runners on the goal. The hitter hits the ball, thrown to right field for a base hit. Panura sort of looked at the ball and started jogging after it. And finally, when he did run out there, the ball, which should have been easily caught, had seeped through into right field for a base hit. So Newsom singled to right, scoring Higgins from second base, and moving Hayes to third base. So as a result, the score is 2-1 in favor of the White Sox, and the A's have runners on first and third. One out, one run home in the second inning, and Rhodes, the pitcher, is at bat. Dusty takes the first one for a strike down over the inside corner above the knees. Platt is playing in pretty close, figuring the pitcher might try to pull a squeeze play, at least sacrifice the man from first to second. And the next pitch sails wide for ball one. Count is one ball and one strike on Rhodes. Umpire calls time when the runner down to first base requests it and goes over and whispers something to Lena Blackburn, the athletic coach there at first base. Throws the first, runners back. Might be figuring that there's a chance of their trying to pull something. And there comes the next one, a curveball, breaking away from the hitter that caught the outside corner a little above the knees for strike two. And it's one ball and two strikes on Rowe. One and two to count. Rose was all set to bunt on the next one, but he pulled back in time to let it go by for the second ball. And the ball popped out of Sewell's glove. It rolled just a few feet into the infield. So Luke grabs it, rubs it up, walks in, calls something to Kennedy, calls after him as Vern starts back to the mound. Then the two come back to their places with Kennedy on the rubber and Sewell crossing back the plate to pass the sign. Count two balls and two strikes. And there comes the next pitch for ball three. It's wide across the waist, and Kennedy will really be in a serious jam now if he can't get this ball over on the pitcher, because there's a fella you've got to get if you're going to win. Three and two. Later swings at the next one to miss the curveball inside and strike out for the second out. Kennedy's control really has gone very bad in the last couple of weeks. Not that he isn't trying, because he is. And it may take him all year to master that new grip on the ball that he's using, the looser grip that he's using to prevent those famous wild pitches of his. And it might take a while before that control gets back. First pitch now to Finney, the leadoff man and left fielder, who is a bad left-handed hitter. The curveball against the inside corner about knee high. One strike to count. He throws again. And it's ball one inside across the waist. So it's one ball and one strike on Finney. One and one. Turns and throws the first. Carter was back in plenty of time. So Panura throws the ball back to Kennedy, and he pitches the pitch a high one wide for ball two on Finney. Two and one, two balls and one strike. Kennedy flips the ball from one hand to another, finally swings around on the rubber only to find Finney out of the batter's box. So he turns, walks out back of the mound to wipe his brow, rub up the ball a little bit, turns around to see Finney back to the plate, so he steps on the rubber. That the runner's now is ready to pitch, pitches, and it's ball three. It's wide and low, and it's 3-1. Burns got to get him over better than that. He's going to have some serious trouble again today. It's one club that he's supposed to beat quite handily, but they certainly pinned his ears back the other day. Now with a runner on the goal, the hitter hits a long drive to center field, but Krivich is waiting there, has it, and it's three out. Ending that inning with only half of the White Sox lead cut off. score 2-1 in favor of the White Sox. In the first half of the second, the A's had one run, one hit, and two men left on base. Two bases on balls, paving the way to the one run. And the score, as I said, is 2-1 in favor of the White Sox as they come to bat. In the last half of the second inning with Kennedy, White Sox pitcher, the first man at bat. The broadcast of the White Sox Philadelphia game comes to you direct from Comiskey Park, the home of the White Sox in Chicago, as a presentation of your neighborhood Texaco dealer, distributor of Texaco, Fire Chief Gasoline. The broadcast comes with the permission of the White Sox and the Athletics to stimulate interest in our national game and in your own local baseball team. This is WCFL at Chicago. Those again start to warm up out there in the moment. Rubber this time with Moss, number two catcher, and Hayes is just walking up there at the plate. Frank was on base the end of the inning. They're over on third base. He had to wait a moment to take a moment to get into his card. The round of applause. Kennedy, who comes hustling out of the dugout and up the plate, stands there to watch the last throw. Moss throws the ball out to second base. Johnson across it to Newsom. Newsom back to the pitcher. And Johnson and Newsom have a little confab of some sort there. Just as they back over toward their position, same as they did yesterday early in the game. Now they go back there. Rhodes is up in front of the mound, moving down the dirt with his feet, his shoe, sole of his shoe, and then steps back on the slab. Back to wind up throws, and then Kennedy hits an easy bound right back at Newsom, who gets it, throws the first, and Byrne is out for the first out in the second inning. One out of the second inning for the White Sox. And Radcliffe is at bat. Rip Radcliffe up at the plate. Throws the first one, and the Ripper takes it wide and low, a curveball away from him for ball one. One ball called. Again winds up, pitches and Rip swings in about right back at Johnson, who got to throw to first, and Rip is out for the second time today in two innings, and it's the second out of the second inning. So it's two out of the second inning for the White Sox. Mike Peters, White Sox center fielder, who paved the way to the White Sox two runs in the first inning by beating out a bunt. He is up there at the plate. Throws, and Mike swings in a foul down the right field line and back against the front of the second deck. It bounds down front and clear back out into the field. Fire Hubbard calls time, and it's trotting out there to get the ball. Second base is started over two, but Hubbard kept right on going to get it. It's one strike on Peter. Winding up once more. Throws, and Peter takes the curveball wide and low for ball one. And it's one ball and one strike on Mike. One and one. He again starts to wind up, throws, and the hitter swings it, punches the ball toward right field. Johnson goes way over, manages to grab the ball, and by the time he retrieves it, the runner is safe at first. And as a result, Felix is on first base with two out in the second inning. And Haas is at bat. I think that Wayne Otto, who has been away for a couple of days, is back on the job. He is the official scorer, and he said he was going to relay him to us. And the first pitch to Haas is a strike over the inside corner about knee high. One strike on Haas. Did Wayne give any sign on it? He did. Eddie got it. I thought so. Tell that youngster there, we didn't keep an eye on Wayne, because Wayne said he's going to forget this silly business and tend to business. The count is 1-1 now on Haas. One ball and one strike. Wayne's giving him over there. And now it's wide and low for ball two, making it 2-1. Two balls and one strike on the mule. I guess I'm getting too old to take these little controversy seriously, George. I don't know. I'm getting, after that birthday when I was 29 again, why, I don't know how many times that's been. It was quite a few. Hitter hits the next one. It's a slow bounder to the
Second baseman who grabbed it and tagged Krivich out and then threw to first to make sure the other man also. But he was tagged out at second base, and it's three out.
Wayne's giving him, isn't he, Whitey?
Yeah, that's what I saw. Wayne told me that he says that silly business is the bunk with him. He's official scorer, and he's going to give him to us.
So,
yeah, Wayne Otto will pass him out.
Thank you, Whitey.
So it's no runs, one hit. One man left on base in the second inning for the White Sox. And the score is still 2-1 in favor of the Sox, the end of the second inning. You gotten your Texaco scorebook yet?
You have, and you're working on it.
Oh, I've had some swell inquiries from fans about ways of scoring some things.
Oh, I meant to bring that one letter down here. It had three very good questions in it. And I want to dig it up and answer those questions just exactly how they were.
But I'll bring that out tomorrow. You know how to get it. Just get your request card at your Texaco station, fill it in and send it in, and you'll get this swell scorebook with 17 games, a complete scoring system and everything else. Now Moses at bat takes the first pitch inside for ball one. And there's ball two. It misses the outside corner above the knees. Rather clear up to the shoulders. Well above the knees, I might say. And it's 2-0. Two balls and no strikes. Kennedy throws again for a strike, this time over the outside corner down around the knees. And it's two balls and one strike. 2-1 on Moser. Throws once more. Wally swings and hit a high fly in the short center field. Krivich is coming in hard under it and makes the catch over in right center. The wind having held it up and dropped it in there. So it's one out in the third inning for the Athletics. And Dean, Chubb Dean, the first baseman, is at bat. Dean's another left-handed hitter who's looking mighty, mighty good out there. Throws the first one, and Chubb swings it, a bounder down to Appling, who comes up with it nicely. Throws the first, and Dean is out for the second out. Makes it two out in the third inning for the Athletics. Two out in the third inning, and Puccinelli is up there at the plate. Puccinelli at bat. Throws the first one, and the Pooch takes it inside across the waist for ball one. One ball called. He winds up and throws again. The hitter hits another bounder back past the pitcher. Hayes comes up with it nicely back of second base. Throws the first, and it's three out. No runs, no hits in the first half of the third inning. And the score remains 2-1 in favor of the White Sox. Sox coming to bat in the last half of the third inning. First man up will be Zeke Manora, the White Sox first baseman and cleanup hitter. Athletic players coming out onto the field with Rhodes just walking out across the infield to start his warm-up out there on the slab. Oh, boy, what weather.
Perfect, eh, George? Cool enough, a lot of sunshine. Mm-hmm. You wear that old battered leather coat of yours and feel comfortable. And without that coat, you don't feel comfortable, do you? Even on a hot day, if you just look at it longingly, once you put it on, you're there. Hey, I got a lot of swell wires there that you brought in yesterday. It came from the studio that were delivered there on Tuesday, but I just got yesterday afternoon an open extra of the game.
Several of them.
Huh?
Again, yeah, only 29 again.
Hey, somebody down in the stand didn't believe me today. Said you're 29 on 10. I told her she was a whole lot more than 14, I knew.
Here's Zeke Manora at bat. With Rhodes winding up, and he throws the first one for a ball inside across the chest, ball one. One ball called. Rhodes winds up, throws once more, and it's a strike over the outside corner across the knees. And it's 1-1. One ball and one strike on Benora. The One and one. Pitcher throws again, and Zeke swings in a high fly out into right field. Short right field. The wind is blowing it back toward the foul line. And Johnson follows it in there and makes the catch nicely, although he had to not only judge a dangerous wind, but he had to battle the sun all the way also. So it's one out in the third inning for the White Sox. And Appling, Luke Appling is up there at the plate. Coach winds up pitches, and Luke takes a wide one across the chest for ball one. One ball called. Ready again, winds up, and throws, and the hitter swings to foul the ball up on the roof of the stand above and to the right of the plate, and it's one and one. One ball and one strike. Then the pitcher has the sign, winds up, and throws, and the hitter swings it up for another pop fly out toward right field. This time, Dean, the first baseman, is following it across the foul line and makes the catch just in foul territory for the second out in the third inning. Two out in the third inning for the White Sox. With Jackie Hayes, White Sox second baseman, up there at the plate. Hayes at bat. Winds up, throws. Jackie takes a strike over the heart of the plate about waist high. One strike on Hayes. Swings again, hit a line drive to left field, but the left fielder finishes waiting. Oh, he almost misjudged it and had to leap high in the air to make a one-handed catch of it for the third out. Finney stood there and jogged in a couple of steps and then saw the ball start to sail over his head instead of sinking as he apparently thought it was going to, and he had to leap into the air to make a fine one-handed leaping stab of the ball to get it for the third out. So it's no runs, no hits in the third inning for the White Sox, and the score remains 2-1 in favor of the White Sox at the end of the third inning. Now, for complete scores up to the minute and complete batteries from other cities, we return to the studio.
The National League in New York, the Cubs are leading the Giants at the end of the first after the sixth inning, 1-0. Davis and Hawkins started for the Cubs with Henshaw pitching in the sixth. Hubble and Mancuso, the giant battery. In Brooklyn, the St. Louis Cardinals lead the Dodgers at the end of the first of the seventh inning by a score of 4-0. Winford and Ogrodowski, the Cardinal battery. The Dodgers using Frank Arsenberry's to open with Phelps catching in the seventh. In Boston, the Bees and the Pittsburgh Pirates are tied at 3-3 at the end of the first half of the seventh inning. Blanton and Patton, the opening battery for the Pirates, with Brown pitching in the fifth. Bush and Lopez starting for the Bees with Cantwell on the mound in the sixth. In Philadelphia, the first game of the doubleheader between the Phillies and the Cincinnati Reds, taken by the Reds, 5-0. In the second game, at the end of the first half of the first inning, the Reds lead the Phillies 1-0. Hollingsworth and Campbell, the Red battery in the second game. For the Phillies, Benge and Wilson. In the American League, in Cleveland, the Indians lead the Washington Senators at the end of the second inning, 4-2. DeShong and Millie's working for the Senators, the Indians using Blayholder and Pitlock to open, Hudlin pitching in the third. In Detroit, the New York Yankees lead the Tigers at the end of the first half of the third inning, 2-0. Broca and Dickey, the Yankee battery, Tigers using Schoolboy, Rowe, and Hayward. And now back to Comiskey Park and Hal Totten. Take it, Hal.
Back of the ballpark for the fourth inning, Bob Johnson, after taking a ball, took a crack in the next ball pitch and hit a home run, wind or no wind, clear into the lower deck of the left field stands in deep left center. Radcliffe made a great try for the ball, leaping high in the air, but it just slipped over the top of the scoreboard into the seat for a home run. Now Higgins goes after the first ball pitch and drives it out to center field, just to the right of center, for a single. As our Mr. Kennedy going to get his ears pinned back for the second time in the series. That's the way they started out against him the other day. They just murdered everything he threw, and the Sox are taking no chances. They have a pitcher warming up in the left field bullpen as Frank Hayes takes the first pitch wide for ball one. There comes ball two, another curveball way outside, and it's 2-0, two balls and no strikes. One nothing is the count. Hitter swings again to miss a curveball for strike one, and it's two balls and one strike
on he. Thank you, Ernie. Yeah, wind's passing him over. Right. 2-1 is the count, 2 balls and 1 strike. Pitcher throws the first, the runner's back there. Now he pitches ball 3 very wide, and it's 3 balls and 1 strike on Hayes. Kennedy stands there roving up that ball, finally gets ready to pitch again. Throws and Frank gets a strike over the inside corner about waist high. Makes the usual start toward first base, but comes back fast. And it's 3-2. 3 balls and 2 strikes. Now with a runner on the goal, the hitter hits a long foul onto the roof of the stand, down beyond first base. And it's still 3 balls and 2 strikes. On Frank Hayes, the athletic catcher, at bat in the fourth inning. Nobody out, 1 run already home, and Higgins on first base. Now Higgins again is on the run. There's another foul up over the roof of the stand, above and to the right of the plate. Three and two still. And there's the next one for ball 4 wide. And Hayes gets the base on ball. Moves Higgins to second base. The Athletics have runners on first and second with nobody out in the fourth inning. 1 run already home. And Newsom, the shortstop, is at bat. Yes, Vernon's having a lot of serious trouble out there. I don't know whether he's going to be able to get out of it, because when the control isn't there, it's hard to get out of a jam, and he's having his trouble. Newsom acted as though he was going to bunt, but very apparently he didn't intend to. Just intended to look for the bad ball, and he got it, wide and low. For ball 1, Philadelphia runners on first and second, nobody out of the fourth. 1 run home, and the score tied 2-2. Hitter swings the next one to hit a high fly down the right field line. It's going foul. Lands down there against the front of the stand, and it's 1-1. 1 ball and 1 strike on Newsom. Kennedy right there for his sign as Hoss gets back to his position. Vern looks at second, throws. And the hitter does bunt the ball down toward first base. Manoah comes in, gets it, throws back at Hayes at first. And it's sacrificed by Newsom. Manoah to Hayes for the first out in the fourth inning, moving Higgins to third base. And Hayes to second. Now the A's have runners on second and third. With 1 out, 1 run already home in the fourth inning. And the pitcher, Gordon Rhodes, Dusty Rhodes, is up there at the plate. Still call all the roads dusty roads, even though we have a lot of concrete and cannon nowadays instead of old dirt roads. Still dusty. Hitter swings hard at the first pitch and fouls it back against the catcher's protector. Bounds over halfway out to first base. Benora comes in, gets it, throws it back to the catcher. He hands it to umpire Quinn for examination. Winds up again, throws, and Dusty swings around his throw bump and then takes a chop at the ball, but misses it for strike 2. Stool seeing him swing around in bunting position, started to run out in front. As a result, the ball hit his glove and rolled over to the right a little bit. So it's 2 strikes on road. Infield pulled in real close, almost to the infield grass. I think he set off that run at the plate if possible. And he throws the next one. It's a little pop fly foul to the left of the plate. On a bunt, so he's out automatically on a foul bunt on the third strike. Scored as a strikeout, and you can make a footnote if you want to in your scorebook, as we do, drawing a line from that K in the lower right-hand corner down to the margin, indicating foul bunt on third strike. man up there, Penny, watches the first pitch come by wide for ball one. Hello, Mr. Pennsylvania. He remembered us today.
And there's one wide for ball two, making it two and nothing.
Two balls and no strikes.
Doing nothing to count, but she winds up again, throws the hitter, swings, and pull a foul down past first base for the first strike. And it makes it two and one. Two balls and one strike on finish. One one to count. Penny walks around the back out of the batter's box as Kennedy rubs up a new ball. Here comes the next pitch, and the hitter hits the bound right back. It just glances off of pitcher's glove, and Hayes makes a great play in front of second base to get the ball and throw to first. Oh, that play was really a beauty by Hayes. Kennedy leaped into the air and just managed to slow up that ball a little bit. Hayes came over fast, grabbed it, and with a great underhand flip toss, got Finney at first base on a close play for the third out. So that ends the fourth inning, and Kennedy pitched out of the inning in great style. After looking very wobbly at the start, he settled down and looked just the opposite of wobbly. One run, two hits, two men left on base in the first half of the fourth inning, and the score remains a tie 2-2 between the White Sox and the Athletics. White Sox coming to bat in the last half of the fourth. First White Sox hitter will be Tony Pyatt at third base, and he already waits there back of the plate as Moss warms up road, waiting for Hayes, who's again on base at the end of the inning. Get into the catching box, get out there to go to work. Throws the ball out there to second base. And it comes back to pitcher as Hyatt walks up there to the plate. Hyatt at bat, the White Sox start the last half of the fourth inning. Throws smoothing the dirt down. In front of the mound, walks back, smooths it down in front of the slab. Turns around, gets his sign, he's winding up. And he pitches, and the hitter bunted the ball, but it's fouled on the ground, back to stand, and it's strike one. One strike to count. One strike, but it goes again, and it's the ball inside across the way. So it's one ball and one strike on fire. One and one. Here comes ball two, a curveball outside, and it's two balls and one strike on fire. 1-1. Winding up once more, throws. Fire swings in a bounder down to the shortstop, who comes over fast, gets it, throws to first, and Dean had to make a reaching catch way out to the left and high, but he made the play nicely for the first out of the fourth inning. One out of the fourth inning for the Sox. And Luke Sewell, White Sox catcher, is up there at the plate. Sewell at bat. Later swings and hits a line drive right out to the shortstop, who manages to scoop it up off the top of the dirt just before it hits the ground. And it's two out in the fourth inning. Two out of the fourth inning for the White Sox, and Kennedy's at bat. Two out in the fourth inning. Kennedy up there. Starts to wind up. Throws, and the hitter swings, hit the ball back. It hits Rhodes right on the foot. Bounce her out in the right field. Kennedy's around first base.
carrying for second base, and Rhodes is still writhing around on the ground there. The ball is recaptured by the second baseman. Rhodes gets up and is whipping around in the infield. Time is called. That was a line smack that either hit his foot or his shin, and it felled him like a blow from a club. He reaches down and rubs his ankle with the ankle and the shin bone just above the foot. Now Kennedy gets his jacket on, goes over to see him. And it goes the two-base hit, of course. For Kennedy, and Byrne is over there seeing how this fellow is, because it really was an awful dirty crack. Start a pitcher warming up in the bullpen in a hurry in case Dusty can't go on. The crowd gives him a hand. Boy, he took a smash that time.
Mama, I don't want that to hit me. Woo.
My foot had gone right off with it. The foot would have gone into center field and the ball into right, I think. Yeah, mine aches just from watching it. No kidding. Boy, he took a dirty crack that time.
Throwing a couple down there to make sure he's all right and able to continue.
Besides, he can pitch all right, but boy, he's going to have a great big black and blue mark and a big lump on that leg. Probably coming up right now. He takes a look at it for a minute. Now faces Rip Ratcliffe. Ratcliffe at bat. Two out in the fourth inning. Coach stands there rubbing up the ball, getting ready to pitch the first one to the Ripper. Let's look back at second base. And throws, and Ratcliffe takes a good strike over the heart of the plate just above the knee. One strike on Ratcliffe. He's ready out there again. Throws. And Rip hits the ball to beauty down the right field line for another base hit. Kennedy's around third base, tearing for the plate. And the ball goes to second. Boy, that fella can really run. Coming across the plate, he kicks Ratcliffe's bat over and then comes back to pick it up. He's a happy-go-lucky rascal. He just was having fun coming around there. And that drive to right field, a single, line single to right by Ratcliffe, scores Kennedy. And again, the White Sox are in front. This time, the score is 3-2. Throws the first one, and McPheeven takes a ball over the plate. But too low. One ball called. And a pitcher waits there again. Gets his time. The first base and throws. And Mike gets the ball to right field. Right fielder coming in fast. The ball drops in front of him for another base hit. Ratcliffe is sailing for third base. And he slides in just under the... No, they got him at third. Ratcliffe, for some reason, slowed up at second, and then when he broke into his stride again, he'd lost just enough time to be caught at third base. Previous third hit was a looping single to right, and Ratcliffe made second on it, but he slowed down at second and then suddenly looked over his shoulder and decided to go to third, and by that time it was too late, and he was out on a very fine throw from right field by Puccinelli, who threw to Higgins at third, getting him for the third out. So it's one run, three hits, one man left on base in the last half of the fourth inning. And the score is 3-2 in favor of the White Sox at the end of the fourth inning. The hardest working parts of your car are those chassis bearings down under. They need constant, efficient lubrication. Guard the bearings in your car with Marfac, the oily, water-resisting chassis lubricant. Clings to the bearing and stays put. Any Texaco service station will Marfac your car. And remember, a Marfac job lasts twice as long as an ordinary grease job. Kennedy ready now to pitch to Moses to start the fourth inning. And the first pitch comes over the plate about knee high for strike one. Byrne is winding up again. Throws and the hitter swings to foul the ball down toward first base. Coach at first base gets it, looks it over,
indicates that it's pretty well messed up. And the umpire throws another ball into the game. Bart Quinn calls for that one. So Lena throws it into Sewell, looks at it, and then throws it immediately out of play. Two strikes now. And there he takes the next one, takes a cut at it, but tries to stop a swing and can't. And he strikes out for the first out in the fifth inning, bringing Dean to bat. Dean up there at the plate. First pitch to Dean is a bad ball for ball one. Wide one, one ball on Dean. And there's a high one wide for ball two. So it's 2-0, two balls and no strike on Dean. Kennedy throws the next one for ball three.
Well, he had all kinds of control to Moses. Now, for Dean up there, he hasn't been able to get one of three pitches open. So it's 3-0. Bird pitches again for, well, it's called ball four, and so he gets a base on ball. Puts Dean on first base with one out of the fifth inning. And Puccinelli, the right fielder, is at bat. It's another husky fellow, right-handed hitter, however. And he swings the first pitch in, a high fly out back to second base. Hayes is calling for the ball and gets it for the second out. That makes it 2 out in the fifth inning for the Athletics. Dean is still on first base, and Big Bob Johnson, who braced the wind with that terrific smash and got it into the stands for a home run in the fourth inning, is up there to play. He really must have hit that ball. Swings the first one, hit a bounder down to Hayes, who gets it, throws the first. Johnson was going down very hard, but he was thrown out at first base with a third out. So it's no run, no hit, one man left on base in the first half of the fifth inning. And the score is still 3-2 in favor of the White Sox as they come to bat in the last half of the fifth inning with Mulehaus, their first hit. Broadcast the White Sox Philadelphia game comes to you direct from Comiskey Park, home of the White Sox in Chicago, as a presentation of your neighborhood Texaco dealer, distributor of Texaco Fire Chief Gasoline. The broadcast comes with the permission of the White Sox and the Athletics, stimulated us in our national game and in your own local baseball team. This is WCFL at Chicago. Rhodes is finishing his warm-up out there as Haas stands to talk to Hayes. Buell is one of the famous Philadelphia alumni that are around the league. One of several on this team. White Sox have really got a load of them again. They had Earnshaw and Simmons, but they've gone. Still have Haas, Dyke, Kane, Dietrich, Shores. Kennedy was also with the A's for a little while as a rookie. So is Radcliffe. Guess that's about all, though. I don't notice any others. Well, we're ready to go. Pitcher starts to wind up throws, and it's a strike over the inside corner about knee high. One strike on Haas. One strike on the Mule. He's back up there again. Pitcher winds up, throws, and he swings to drive the ball out to right center. It's going way, way out there for a long base hit. Puccinelli grabs for it, but it hits his foot and bounced past him. By the time he recovers it and throws it in, Haas is on second base. And it's a hit and an error. A single to right center by Haas, and he gets the second base on Puccinelli's fumbling error. So he's on second base with nobody out in the fifth inning, and Zeke Benura is at bat. Watches second base.
and throws, and the hitter takes it inside across the waist for ball one. One ball called. He throws once more, and there's a strike over the heart of the plate waist. High in the count is one ball and one strike. One and one. Again, and the hitter takes a wide one across the knees for ball two. The count is two balls and one strike. One, one the count. Crowd out there in left field seats are yelling if they want a homer. Oh, buttered all over. Going to get a little business from George here again. Two and one. Whoa. Zeke was all cock ready for that one. Throws through on those full of string balls, slowed up on that ball, and as he did it, Zeke got all set, but the ball sailed up past the peak of his cap. It didn't break at all, so he took it for ball three. Makes it three and one. And the hitter swings the ball, this one onto the roof of the stand, above and to the right of the plate, hits three and two. Three balls and two strikes on Benora. Three and two the count. It's ready once more. Throws, and it's ball four, wide and low, and it's a base on ball for Benora. The White Sox have runners on first and second, but nobody out in the fifth inning. Luke Appling is at bat. Luke Appling, the White Sox shortstop, up there at the plate. Luke might try to bunt, but they don't expect him to. The infield isn't playing for it. Oh, that hits to right as much as he does and really hits with runners this position. No, he reaches around the bunt, punts the ball towards third base. Higgins comes in fast, gets it, and throws it first. And Dean makes a beautiful play, reaching around behind Appling to get that ball just in the nick of time, because Higgins was playing pretty deep and just barely got him. But it took a very nice play by Dean to make it possible. So it's one out in the fifth inning for the White Sox. And now they have runners on second and third with Jackie Hayes at bat. He winds up, throws, and Hayes swings in a pop foul coming up out of the roof of the stand over our head. A little bit to the left, and he's grounded down back of it. Hits the ball, rolling it down in there, around. Great fielding play.
Great play, Whitey.
Whitey caught that ball while it was rolling down there in that slanting roof. And there's the next one inside and low for ball one. So it's one ball and one strike on Hayes. One and one the count. It's infield again. It's right in on the edge of the grass, as the White Sox infield was a little while ago. Playing to cut off any further run at the plate if possible. Again, the pitcher starts to wind up throws. Jackie swings in a long drive to center field. Moses is waiting back there. Both runners are touching up. He catches it and they start. But Benora goes off. The throw comes to plate and the runner slides in safely, getting in just ahead of that great throw from Moses. What I mean, that was a throw. Haas coming in there has the game leg and has been favoring it, that injured leg, quite a bit. So it wasn't perhaps going as fast as he sometimes has, because he couldn't. And Moses made a great throw to the play, and Haas had to just barely slide in under it to get into the plate with the run that puts the White Sox ahead 4-2. Now Tony Pyatt is at bat. Pyatt up there at the plate. Rose throws the first one, and Tony takes a good strike over the heart of the plate about waist high. One strike on Pyatt. Watches back there, throws again. Pyatt takes a high one inside for ball one, and it's one ball and one strike on Pyatt. Benora is on second base, two out, one run home in the fifth inning, and the score is 4-2 in favor of the White Sox over the Athletics. Tony swings again to miss a fastball for strike two, and it's one ball and two strikes on Tony. One and two.
swings around, he gets his sign, he's ready. Pitches, and it's strike three, a fast ball over the outside corner, waist high. Bryant let it go by without swinging at it, and it's called out on strike for the third out. Third out in the fifth inning. It's one run, one hit, one error, and one man left on base. Well, the four aces pop up, Georgie. Old four aces. And the score at the end of the fifth inning, the White Sox are leading the Athletics 4-2. Now, once again, for just a moment, we return to studio.
Way to definitely settle baseball post-mortem. Baseball scorebook and play-by-play record. Al Thornton has set up in easily understandable fashion his own system of play-by-play scoring, which he has developed over a period of years. By following these printed instructions and any additional data which he will give you over the air, you can get your own records. You can then, too, technical gather together in the book lots of other interesting baseball data. Photographs of both teams, nicknames, ages, averages of the players, schedules of all major league games. In fact, the 1936 Texaco Baseball Scorebook is something you'll want to keep. Here's how you can get your copy absolutely free. Just go to any Texaco service station and ask for a request card. Then write your name and address on the card, stamp it, and put it in the mail. Remember, there's nothing to buy. Just send in your request card, and the sooner you get your book, the sooner you too will be able to score these games just like Hal Totten does. Now back to Comiskey Park for the continuation of the baseball broadcast, brought to you by permission of the Chicago White Sox and the Philadelphia Athletics to stimulate interest in our national game and in your own local team. Okay, Hal.
Back at the ballpark for the sixth inning, Higgins at bat for the Athletics. Count of one ball and two strikes. Kennedy throws. Higgins hits the ball out into right field for a base hit. Hayes has got a good start on the ball, but it was through too fast for him. And it's Pinky's second hit besides the walk this afternoon. But put Higgins on first base, but nobody out in the sixth inning for the Athletics. And Frank Hayes, the A's catcher, is at bat. Throws one, and Frank swings, hit a long drive foul, way down the right field line, far back into second deck, but it bounds out and over, back down amongst the box seat customers. And it's one strike on Hayes. Hits the next one, a terrific smash to center field. Peters comes over and ranges back to make the catch nicely. Boy, he had to be very, very quick in his judgment on that one, but that ball was hit hard, and he ranged over to his Gordon left or right center, and then ranged back a little and made the guess just exactly right. So it's one out in the sixth inning for the Athletics. Higgins is still on first base, and Lamar Newsom, the shortstop at bat, takes the first pitch for a strike over the heart of the plate about waist high. Ready to pitch, the first one throws, and it's a curve ball wide and low for ball one. One ball called. And the pitcher seems ready, turns and throws the first. Runner's back there in time, though. Now he pitches and the hitter swings, hit a bounder down to Hayes. He gets it, flips it to Appling. He throws the first, and it's a double play. For some reason or other, Newsom stopped up just as he was arriving at first base. And I think he could have beaten that ball, and he's kicking the dirt as he walks back out to his position. But I think he thought there were two out, and that man being forced at second made it three out. And very peevish as he walks back out there toward his position, because he knows he did something a little bit wrong. He might not have beaten it, but he stopped, and the play was taking so long there was a chance that he might have beaten that ball to first base. A very peculiar thing, but I think explained by that one thing, and he thought it was already two out, and that out at second base made it three. So it's no runs, one hit in the sixth inning for the Athletics. Score remains 4-2 in favor of the White Sox. Sox coming to bat in the last half of the sixth with Luke Sewell, White Sox catcher, the first man up. Finished down there. Pitcher has the ball again. Walks slowly back onto the mound. And Rhodes starts his windup, pitches. Sewell takes the curveball inside and low for ball one. One ball called. Rhodes waits there again, seems to have the sign. He's winding up. Throws, and the hitter swings in a high fly to right field. Right fielder ranging over toward the foul line easily. And he misjudged the ball. I lost it in the sun, and it drops out there for a base hit. And Sewell comes into second base, a throw bounding along and hitting him in the leg as he arrives. Puccinelli started over, jogging over, watching for the ball. And then suddenly, the last instant, the wind caught it and blew it away from him. And it landed well out of reach and inside the foul line also, for a two-base hit. Sort of a wind and sun double, you might say. Now Vern Kennedy is up there. Kennedy at bat. And he reaches out, bunts the first one toward first base. The pitcher, Rhodes, comes over, gets it, throws the ball right into the runner. But again, Dean made a nice play. Doggone, that Dean really looks awful good on those kind of plays, which we've heard many first basemen say is the toughest play that they can make. And that is the ball thrown right into the runner. And three times today and once yesterday, Dean made those plays. Now the infield comes in close again, but all but Dean playing right in close. Dean is back a little as Radcliffe steps up there. And the first pitch is wide and low for ball one. One ball called. Ready again. Throws. And the hitter hits the ball out to the left. The shortstop goes far to his right and gets it and makes the throw to first in time to get Radcliffe. Chris Swung starts driving that ball toward left field, but Newsom shifted very fast. Go back and got it and throw to first to get his man. Now with two outs, the infield moves back to normal position. And Mike Leavitt comes to bat. The Sewell still on third base. Score 4-2 in favor of the White Sox. Watches third base and pitches, and it's a strike over the outside corner about knee high. One strike to count. Throws again, and it's a curveball wide for ball one. And the count is one ball and one strike on Creevy. One and one. Ready once more, throws, and Creevy started the swing, stopped in time to have it called ball two. It curved wide, and so it's two balls and one strike on Creevy. Two and one. Pitcher has his sign again. He throws, and Mike swings it about a right flag at Rhodes, who leaps into the air, grabs it, throws the first, and Mike is out for the third out, and Rhodes did a nice job of pitching himself out of that inning after the wind and sun had combined to give Sewell a double at the opening of the inning, and the next man sacrificed him to serve. He was still on third at the end of the inning. No runs, one hit, one man left on base in the last half of the sixth inning. And at the end of the sixth, the White Sox lead the Athletics 4-2. Now again, for up-to-the-minute scores and complete batteries from other cities, we return to studio.
In the National League in New York, the Chicago Cubs lost the game to the Giants today by a score of 3-1. The Giants had 3 runs, 6 hits, and 1 error to the Cubs, 1 run, 7 hits, and 1 error. Davis and Hartnett opened for the Cubs with Henshaw hurling in the sixth and Warnke on the mound in the seventh. Hubble and Mancuso went the entire route for the winning Giants. In Brooklyn, the St. Louis Cardinals are leading the Dodgers at the end of the first half of the ninth inning by a score of 7-0. Winford and Ogrodowski working for the Cards. Frankhouse and Berry's opening for the Dodgers with Phelps catching in the seventh, Clark on the mound in the ninth. In Boston, the Pittsburgh Pirates and the Bees are tied 3-3 at the end of the tenth inning. Blanton and Padden working for the Pirates to open with Brown on the mound in the fifth. Bush and Lopez, the battery for the Bees, to start with Cantwell hurling in the sixth. The first game of the doubleheader in Philadelphia between the Phils and the Cincinnati Reds was taken by the Reds 5-0. In the second game, the score is tied at the end of the first half of the fourth inning, 3-3. Hollingsworth and Campbell, the Red battery, the Phillies using Finch and Wilson. In the American League, in Cleveland, the Indians lead the Washington Senators at the end of the fourth inning, 7-6. DeShong and Millie's working for the Senators with Cascarella in the fourth, Blayholder and Pitlack, the opening battery for the Indians, Hudlin on the mound in the third, and Brown pitching in the fourth. In St. Louis, the Red Sox are leading the Browns at the end of the first inning, 1-0. The Farrells, the battery for the Red Sox, Thomas and Giuliani working for the Browns. In Detroit, the New York Yankees lead the Tigers at the end of the first of the sixth, 3-0. Brooke and Dickey, the Yankee battery, the Tigers using Rowe and Hayward. And now back to Comiskey Park and Hal Totten. Take it, Hal.
Back at the ballpark for the seventh inning. Dusty Rhodes, the pitcher, came to bat, hit the first ball pitch for a high fly into center field, which Peters got for the first out. Now with a count of 1-1 on Finney, he swings, hits the bounder down to Benora, who has to make a one-handed stop on a bad hop there, but gets the ball and runs over to first base to get Finney for the second out. And it's two outs in the second inning for the Athletics, with Moses, Wally Moses, the center fielder at bat. And he looks around, the boys out there, gets ready to pitch now to Wally, throws, and it's a fast one inside and low for ball one. One ball called.
The door is banging.
Kennedy throws again. The hitter hits the line drive to left field, and Radfish chasing it, but it goes over his head, bounds against the wall. Rip gets it. Runner pulls up at second base easily. Radfish throws the ball into Appling, and it's a double to the base of the left field wall by Moses, putting him on second base with two out of the seventh inning.
Yeah, I like to watch that fella run. He really goes just as smooth and easy.
Two out in the seventh inning, Moses on second, and Dean, Sub Dean, the A's first baseman, is at bat. Kennedy looks around, gets ready to pitch the first one to Chubb. Throws, and the runner's on the go for third base, and slides in and is out. He slid hard into Pyatt, who had the ball and brought it down on him, and in sliding into Tony, his foot couldn't reach third base, and he's caught stealing for the third out. So it's no runs, one hit in the seventh inning for the Athletics. And now the crowd is standing up for the seventh inning stretch. As the White Sox come to bat in the last half of the seventh, Newhouse, the first White Sox hitter, score 4-2 in favor of the White Sox. Rhodes is just arriving out there in the mound. A good crowd out here today, as well as a great crowd of youngsters out in that left field stand. New stands there watching. Ball was thrown out to second base. Johnson missed it out there and had to chase it out into the outfield. He just knocked it down, but he gets it and throws it back. And the pitch is ready to pitch again to Hart. Starts his wind up. Throws. And Mule swings to foul the ball back toward us here. Catch is coming back fast. He might get to it. He didn't quite make it. And it's strike one. Hart walks over to pick up his mask and rub off the padding. Gets the dust off it. Hands it back to Frank as he gets back up there to the plate. Hayes made a good try for that ball. And it's one strike on Hunt. One strike count. Throws again and Hunt takes the ball inside across the waist. And it's 1-1. One ball and one strike on Hunt. Swings it, the next one, a high fly into the right center. Moses is waiting back there for it. Gets it easily, and it's one out of the seventh inning. For the seventh inning for the White Sox. And Deke Benora is at bat. Benora up there at the plate. Lines up the pitch. First one throws and Zeke swings it. A pop fly going foul to the right of the plate. Hayes is also chasing that one over to the stand and grabs it down there, but apparently couldn't quite hang on to it. He crashed into the front of the stand. Apparently is unhurt. Comes walking back there. Made another nice try. And as a result, it's one strike on Big Zeke. One strike on Benura. And the pitcher throws again with Zeke hitting a hard bounder to Johnson, who comes up with it nicely, throws the first, and it's two out of the seventh. And Luke Appling is up there at the plate. Appling at bat. Well, School's keeping again out there in left field bullpen. Cellini's putting in his afternoon work. One of the other boys taking long work out there with Muddy Rule. Luke swings the first pitch in, a high fly to right field. The right fielder coming over. And still misjudges the ball a little in the wind and sun, but manages to follow it over far enough to get it for the third out. So it's no runs, no hits in the seventh inning for the White Sox. And at the end of the seventh inning, White Sox still lead the Athletics, the score being 4-2. When every minute counts, you'll find that it doesn't pay to guess about gasoline. Tourists, traveling men, people who drive many miles a day against time, find that Texaco Fire Chief never lets them down. And best of all, it costs no more than ordinary gasoline. Dean, Chevy Dean, the A's first baseman, is at bat to start the eighth inning for Philadelphia. Kennedy throws the first one. He hits it to left field, but it's foul down there and just misses one of the warm-up catchers, and it's strike one. One strike to count. Joe Morris, he's down there taking a workout, warming somebody up, warming up Cellini, and that ball just missed him. There's ball one high and wide, and the count is one ball and one strike on Dean. One and one is the count. Swings again, hit a ball back through the box. Appling almost gets it back to second base, but not quite, and it goes through into center field for a base hit. Single to center field by Dean, putting him on first base. Nobody out in the eighth inning. And Puccinelli, the Athletics' right fielder, is at bat. Puccinelli up there at the plate. He throws, and George swings it, a ground ball down to Appling, who gets it, throws to Hayes. Jackie throws the first, and it's another double play. Well, that White Sox infield is certainly turning in those double plays these days. Got that ball flipping around out there in real championship style. So it's two out in the eighth inning for the Athletics. And the next man up there is Bob Johnson, the A's second base. Johnson at bat. And he throws the first one, and Bob swings to miss a high fastball inside. And it's strike one.
Strike, George. Strike one.
And there's a ball wide and low. So the count is one ball and one strike on Johnson. One and one to count. Johnson swings the next in a high fly down back at first base. Benora's following it over into foul territory and makes the catch for the third out. So it's no runs, one hit in the first half of the eighth inning. And the score remains 4-2 in favor of the White Sox as they come to bat in the last half of the eighth with Jackie Hayes, the first man at bat. Broadcast, the White Sox Philadelphia game comes to you direct from Comiskey Park, home of the White Sox in Chicago, as a presentation of your neighborhood Texaco dealer, distributor of Texaco Fire Chief Gasoline. The broadcast comes with the permission of the White Sox and the Athletics to stimulate interest in our national game and in your own local baseball team. This is WCFL Chicago. Rhodes finishing his warm-up Now Jackie Hayes stands there waiting to take his turn at bat to start the eighth inning. Finishes the warm-up. There goes the ball again up second base. And we'll be ready to go now in the last half of the eighth. Hayes waits there at the plate as Rhodes gets his sign, gets ready to pitch to him. Starts his windup. Throws and Jackie reaches out and sort of pushes the bunt out toward first base. Keaton gets the ball and races for the bag. And Hayes beats it out for a base hit. Dean couldn't make any other play on that ball but that. He started for the base and realized that the pitcher couldn't get it. So he raced out to his right, grabbed it. And Rhodes wasn't anywhere near getting to first base. So Dean, without losing any time on the play, didn't hesitate at all, raced for the bag. But Hayes, a fast man, beat him. And it's a base hit for Jackie. His second of the ball game. Puts him on first base with nobody out in the eighth inning. And Tony Pyatt is at bat. Pyatt runs up on the first one. Going to try to hit it to right, but the pitch came in high and inside, and it's ball one. And there's a high one inside for ball two, and the count is 2-0. 2 balls and no strike on Pyatt. Nothing to count. Throws again, and Tony swings in a line drive, and the shortstop leaps high in the air to grab the ball and then holds it when Hayes gets back to first base so quickly that to make a throw would be to take a chance on an error. The ball was hard hit, so hard hit that Hayes, who had made a break for second, saw where it was going and hadn't had time to get far away from the base by the time it was caught. But it was able to get back. And so Hayes is still on first base, one out in the eighth inning, and Luke Sewell, White Sox, the catcher, is at bat. Ward swings around, ready to pitch the first one, throws, and Luke swings in a drive out into right center for a base hit. Going on out there, past the right field here, going clear through to the wall. Hayes is around third base on his way home, and Sewell is pulling up at third base. He makes the turn, but the ball is being run in. Center fielder raced up to the wall and stumbled and fell on that incline of the sod out there at the far end of the scoreboard, but that triple by Sewell hit the wall, that is, bounded out as far as the wall, landing against it at the far end of the right field scoreboard, and it's Luke's second extra base hit of the game. First one going to him by virtue of wind and sun, and it drives home Hayes with a run that gives the White Sox the lead by a score of 5-2, and brings Vernon Kennedy, the White Sox pitcher, to bat. Rhodes out there gets ready to pitch the first one. Vernon throws, and Kennedy hits the ball into left center for a base hit, his second hit of the game, and it scores Sewell easily from third base with the second run of the inning and the White Sox sixth run of the game. Kennedy's other hit was that terrific smash off Rhodes' shin. That bounded out into right field for a two-base hit. And he scored right after that on Radford's single. Now the Rippers up there to plate. One out, two runs home. In the eighth inning, and the first pitch is inside and low. The ball one. Stocky left-handed hitter. The A's have started two pitchers warming up in the right field bullpen. Both of them right-handers. Throws another one, and Kennedy hits it down right field line for a good base hit. I mean, practice that. Kennedy is around second base. Ball is coming over there to second base, and it bounds up rather peculiarly. Newsom knocks it to the ground in time to hold Radcliffe at second, and Kennedy up third. It's a double down the right field line by Radcliffe. And it looks though there's going to be a change in pitchers. Rhodes turns and starts for the clubhouse. And Earl Mack, son of Connie Mack, and one of the coaches of the club, walks up there to tell the umpire who the new pitcher is going to be. I believe it's Ross, do you? Mr. George believes it's Ross. Mr. George very often is correct. Very often correct. do very well on that one. Lisenby, I didn't know he was with this club. We used to call him Lisenby when he was with, if it's the same fella. He used to be with, Bart. He isn't even in the program here. Can't tell the players without a scorecard. In this case, you can't tell this one with one, can you? Lisenby's the right-hander. Looks very much like the same boy who some years ago was with Boston and Washington. Whether it is or not, I'm not sure. He's been up in the International League and going pretty well lately. And he's finishing his warm-up out there in the mound. With catcher Hayes as Previch Wake take his turn at bat. White Sox now have runners on second and third. One out, two runs already home in the eighth inning. Now 6-2 in favor of the Sox. And Previch finally steps up there as umpire Quinn dusts the plate and the infielders trot to their position. Again, the infielders come into the edge of the infield grass. Try to cut off any run at the plate if possible. He throws, and Previch takes a fast strike over the outside corner across the waist. One strike on Previch. Winding up once more, throws, and Mike takes a high one wide for ball one. Count is one ball and one strike on Previch. One and one. He winds up again, throws, and Mike swings it a slow foul to the left of the plate. Waiting back here is Haas, and he grabs the ball on that high bounce, looks it over, tosses it back to umpire Quinn, who had already given the catcher another ball to put in play. Umpire pockets that one as fit for further use, and Previch steps back up there once more. White Sox runners on second and third. Mike starts to swing at the next one, stops, the ball hits the bat and goes foul. Back to the stand, he was pulling away from it to keep from finishing his swing because the pitch was high and inside, and in pulling away from it, the ball hit the bat and went foul to the stand. Haas is walking back to get it. Still one ball and two strikes. Lisenby throws again, and Mike swings in a slow bounder into the infield. The third baseman, Higgins, comes in fast, gets the ball and throws the first, nipping Previch by an eyelash over there on a very, very close play, and it scored one run. Kennedy scored easily, and Radcliffe went to third on Previch, infield out. And Higgins, incidentally, had to make a beautiful play on that ball to get the run. And he nipped him by an eyelash. That's three runs this inning. White Sox leading the Athletics 7-2 with Radcliffe still on third base. Two outs and Mule Haas at bat. The first pitch to Mule is a wide one low for ball one. Throws once more for a strike over the outside corner waist high, and it's one and two. One ball and two strikes. One and two to count. Hitter hits the next one, a bounder out back at second base. Shortstop Newsom gets it, throws the first, and Haas is out for the third out, ending the eighth inning. In the eighth inning, the White Sox had three runs, four hits, and one man left on base. And the score at the end of the eighth inning, the White Sox, 7, Philadelphia Athletics, 2. As I said before, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to bring some mail out meant to today that I've received from fans who have gone over the scoring system that we have in the Texaco scorebook that you can obtain so easily that the Texaco company is giving away with great pleasure. That system in there is very complete, more so than a lot of systems, but naturally there are some certain little tricks that we have that you can hardly put in a system because everybody has certain of those differences. And if you want to know, have any questions about the scoring, drop me a line. I'll either give it on the air or possibly, if I can, if there aren't too many questions, do it by mail so that you can have all the dope. But remember to get this book with room for 17 games, a complete scoring system, the Sox and Sox rosters, Stop in at any technical station, ask for a request card, fill it out. All he asks for is your name and address. Mail it. It's already addressed to me. Put a 1 cent stamp on it and mail it, and you'll get your book. Now to start the ninth inning, Higgins at bat, and the first pitch comes by wide for ball one. One ball called. And there's ball two, wide across the knees, making it 2-0 on Frank Higgins, known as Stinky Higgins, the athletic third baseman, who already has a walk and 2 hits in this ball game. Umpire threw the ball out of play that was being used there, and the next pitch comes high inside. Ball three. Didn't do much good, did it? Down is 3-0, 3 balls and no strikes. There comes the first strike. It catches the inside corner just above the knees. Run the count to 3-1. 3 balls and 1 strike. Kennedy winds up again, throws for ball four. It's wide and low, and Higgins now has a perfect day at bat with 2 walks and 2 singles. Stinky's on first base. Nobody out in the ninth inning for the Athletics. And Frank Hayes, the catcher, is at bat. Hayes up there at the plate. Kennedy throws the first one, and Hayes takes a strike, a fastball over the outside corner about knee high. 1 strike on Hayes. He swings the next one, hit into left field for a good clean base hit. The runner from first is stopping at second, and the Athletics have started what might turn into a serious rally here. They have runners on first and second with nobody out in the ninth inning. And Newsom, Lamar Newsom, known as Whitey Newsom, the Athletic shortstop. Cocky little blonde-haired right-handed hitter is at bat. And he takes the first pitch for a strike over the heart of the plate about waist high. 1 strike to count. Pinch hitter going to come up here now. Bat in place of the pitcher following this man. Haven't spotted quite yet who it is. Probably Nemec. Hitter hits the next one about it back through the box. It goes on into center field for a base hit. 1 run is coming into the plate, and they let the ball go. The pitcher started to get the ball and deflected it so that it changed the course enough, and the catcher couldn't see it. It hit his leg and bounded back to the stand, letting the other runners go to second and third. And now Kennedy is really in the spot. The last instant, Kennedy, who had his hand up, tried to pull it down to let it go at, apparently at the catcher's call, but he deflected it so that Luke couldn't see it. So on Newsom single to center, Higgins scored. And Hayes went to second, and now just what who they call that error on, I'm not sure. We're trying to find out from Wayne Otto, the official scorer. Was back from his vacation. Then Nemec batting for Lisenby hits the ball down to Appling and is thrown out at first base for the first out with Hayes scoring on the play to give the Athletics 2 runs this inning and make the score 7-4. And the head of the batting order, Lou Finney, is at bat. Taking the first pitch inside and low for ball one. It dropped out of Sewell's glove, but he grabbed it fast. Then he hits the next one, a high fly coming down foul back at third base. Platt follows over there and makes the catch for the second out. And that makes it 2 out of the 9th inning. 2 out of the 9th inning for the Athletics, and Moses is at bat. Wally up there at the plate waiting now. And the first pitch is high and inside for ball one. Hitter swings the next to hit a high fly, also foul going down back at third base. Pyatt is following it over and makes the catch right in front of the stand for the third out, and the White Sox win the ball game 7-4. You say they signaled to Whitey that that was an error on the throw, George? Well, that's what I figured it probably was, but we wanted to make sure of it. That error that let the man go to second and third is given to the center fielder
on the throw. Peter Johnny is the throw. And that's the way that was scored. Now in the ninth inning, the Athletics had two runs, two hits. There's one error and one man left on base. And the score is 7-4. White Sox making seven runs, 13 hits, one error. They had eight men left on the base. The Athletics had four runs, nine hits, two errors. They had seven men left on base. Time of the game, an hour and 45 minutes. The winning pitcher, Kennedy, and the losing pitcher, Rowe. Summary again, for the benefit of those who keep all those things in the scorebook and are checked with them, technical scorebook. White Sox, seven runs, 13 hits, one error, with eight men left on base. The Athletics, four runs, nine hits, two errors, and seven men left on base. Time of the game, an hour and 45 minutes. Winning pitcher, Kennedy. Losing pitcher, Rowe. Tomorrow is Ladies' Day, and the Boston Red Sox will be in town to open their four-game series in three games. Single games on Friday and Saturday, and a doubleheader on Sunday, and the doubleheader, the first game, as usual, starts at 1:30. We'll see you on a lot of those days, but if you're not out here, why, we hope to be talking to you, but that's all for now. And speaking for George, as well as myself, Hal Totten, bid you good afternoon from Comiskey Park, and we return to the studio. Bye now.
Speaking to you from the studio, ladies and gentlemen, we bring you a summary of the other baseball games that have been played this afternoon. First in the National League, in New York, the Chicago Cubs. Snap your roadwork. It has the stamina, the quick getaway, the reserve of extra power and speed for the open stretches that make sluggish cars look like part of the scenery. Texaco Fire Chief is emergency type gasoline. That means Fire Chief meets rigid federal specifications for emergency use. It's fast firing, crowded with action. Fill up with a tank full of Fire Chief, then try out your car. You'll find that in response to the same pressure on the accelerator to which you're accustomed, your car will step out faster, and that you'll get more enjoyable miles from each gallon. Reason enough why more tourists buy Texaco Fire Chief gasoline than any other single brand. Remember, when you get a filling of Fire Chief at the Texaco station near you, you'll be getting more for your money. So drive with Texaco and save. Your neighborhood Texaco service station has brought you this broadcast direct from Comiskey Park by permission of the Chicago White Sox and the Philadelphia Athletics to stimulate interest in our national game and in your own local team. Fred Fowler, speaking for the Texas Company, invites you to tune in tomorrow afternoon at 2:45 for another baseball broadcast with Hal Totten at the microphone. And whenever you hear the siren and bell, think of Texaco. The voice of labor.